This is Abby, and you are listening to Upzoned.
Got my bus pass, been a ride first class, street car downtown, where the fine ladies and the peeps are. OG said,
don't hurt nobody.
Looking this damn clean, got my fit on.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to another episode of Upzoned, a show where we take a big story from the news that touches the strong town's conversation each week, and we upzone it. We talk about it in depth. I'm Abby Newsham, a planner in Kansas City, and today I am joined by Michael Schneider, founder of an organization called Streets for All and the campaign manager for Healthy Streets Los Angeles. Michael, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get into the story, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your background, how you got into founding these campaigns, this organization, and really what your story is here.
I should say that this is sort of the second iteration of my career. I didn't start off as an advocate or an urbanist or frankly any of it. I was the opposite. I'm born and raised in Los Angeles, which means I was born and raised to drive a car everywhere. And I did that for many years, living life like Los Angeles intended for me to live. And about 10 years ago, I dusted off an old bicycle and I challenged myself to get around town for a week. That's what I had in my head. Just don't die, do it for a week. And by day two or three, I was just so in love with the lifestyle. I had solved the two biggest complaints people have living here. I was never in traffic. I never had to look for parking, which means I was always perfectly on time. My trip time was always the same. And I was having fun getting to where I needed to go. I felt great mentally and physically. And I just was minding my own business and living like that for a while. And when my wife and I started to have kids and I would have a kid on the bike with me, what was annoying for me, cars passing me unsafely, honking, following me too closely, turned into sometimes blind rage when I felt like a driver put one of my daughter's lives at risk. So that was the genesis for me kind of waking up, over-educating myself, frankly, on the harms car-dominated cities have. I could never put my finger on it growing up. Why does Europe feel so different than North America or Mexico City? My dad grew up in Mexico City, so I spent a lot of time there. Why do these places feel different? And finally, in 2019, I ran for and was elected to my local neighborhood council, and I got involved, and I started Streets for All to try to take Los Angeles from being a car paradise to a multimodal paradise. We have the weather for it. It would be great if our infrastructure caught up and we had a more multimodal city. And I guess the last thing I'll say is, you know, you can really go deep on this. Your guys' content, not just bikes, so many great authors, Moda City, so many inspiring people around the world that have talked about this topic for so long. And I radicalized myself reading those books, watching YouTube videos and listening to podcasts to the point where I resent the fact that Los Angeles is so dangerous for pedestrians and cyclists. My kids go to school across the street and my wife and I don't feel comfortable with even our 8-year-old crossing the street by herself because at drop-off time in the morning, cars are absolutely insane and drivers don't seem to care that there's little kids around. And it's just a sad state to be in. I would love to live in a place that's just safer and more multimodal.
Yeah. And once you see it, it's like you can't unsee it. It becomes this very sad state where before it was just a state of reality that was so normalized. And once you realize that that doesn't have to be the way the world works and the way our cities work, it certainly radicalizes you, most certainly.
It's almost a curse. I mean, I wish I could turn it off. I drive my wife crazy walking down the street and saying like, there should be a curb ramp there. Or look how wide that lane is. There should narrow it and put a bike lane. And she's like, can't we just walk and just talk normally? I'm like, this, I can't unsee it. It's really
hard. No, you can't. Yeah. You have to radicalize everyone in your family until they see it. By the time this episode comes out, hopefully we have some good news with regard to infrastructure being built that actually supports this cause in LA. Although we don't want to make any calls today during this interview, we are covering an article that is published in the LA Times by David Zonser. It is entitled LA Bus and Bike Lane Measures Will Cost $3.1 Billion, a new report says. Backers cry foul. So this article has been written in advance of an upcoming election in Los Angeles with a ballot measure called Measure HLA. If approved by voters next week, it would install hundreds of miles of transportation improvements over the next decade, focused on bike lanes and sidewalk improvements. According to the city's administrative officer, the measure would require $3.1 billion of projects over the next decade without delivering additional transportation funds. He says the measure would mean city leaders will need to shelve other construction projects to make way for required bike lane and sidewalk improvement projects. The intent of the ballot measure is to ensure that the city's mobility plan, which was adopted in 2015, actually gets implemented as improvements are being made to streets. So this proposal is on the March 5th LA ballot, and we will have results when this episode goes live on March 6th. So before we get into the details of the story, and I know you want, there's probably a lot of details that we should get into, I do want to emphasize a statistic that was brought up in this article, and that is that traffic deaths now exceed the number of homicides in LA. And this makes basically the design of streets an incredibly important public safety issue. So I'm curious, from your perspective, why multimodal transportation is such a politically charged issue when it comes to budgets, where other public safety issues maybe don't fall under the same level of scrutiny, like police and fire budgets.
Well, I think that the auto industry and maybe cultural forces in general for 80 years have told Americans that cars are freedom and that we should optimize our cities around cars because that's the future and that's the way people need to get around. And it's hard to, you know, everything from movies that depict the guy on the bike as a loser and the guy with the hot sports car gets the girl he wants, like all of this sort of stereotypical stuff is built into our society. So in a city like Los Angeles, most people don't like sitting in traffic. Most people don't like looking for parking. But I think they don't necessarily have the imagination. I certainly didn't. You know, if you had told me 15 years ago, you're going to give up your car and ride a bicycle to LAX to fly somewhere, I would, you know, laugh you out of the room. And today I would never want to take a car to LAX. That sounds horrible. But I sound like the radical. So I think budgets reflect the supposedly reflect the priorities of citizens, and most Angelenos are interested but scared about alternatives to the car and can't really see themselves taking a walk, riding transit, or riding a bike if they have an option. What I think is really unique about LA, well, there's a couple things. 50% of trips are 3 miles or less, which is fascinating. In other words, we could get so many cars off the road every day with a 15-minute or less bike ride. I can't even imagine what the city would look like, how clean the air would be, how much you could hear the birds singing in the trees if half of the cars disappeared. And I think when we say those stats to people, inevitably people come back with, well, what if you live in the deep San Fernando Valley and work in Long Beach? Well, okay, in that situation, you probably need to drive and you have a miserable 2-hour commute each way. But for most people, for the daily trips to the grocery store or to pick your kids up from school or whatever, those can be done. And what I've been encouraged by is we have 6 out of the 15 city council members that have endorsed Measure HLA so far. And there's sort of a new crop of LA city leaders that recognize that a more multimodal city is not just good politics, you win elections that way, but it's good for climate, it's good for road safety. They're speaking out about the fact that car crashes are the single biggest cause of death for kids in LA now. And they seem to care. So I think those budgets are going to change. Having said that, there's this little known city position called the city administrative officer in LA. And well, maybe I'll let you ask me about the ballot measure in a minute, but the numbers that he's stating are completely inflated and inaccurate. And having said that, I would love it if the city would spend anywhere near what he's saying that it would cost on infrastructure. We really do need that level of investment, but HLA wouldn't require it.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about HLA itself and what it actually requires. So my understanding is that based on the language that you can find on your website for the campaign, is basically whenever the city makes improvements to a segment of street that is included in the mobility plan, that basically we just need to follow the mobility plan and carry out the multimodal improvements that are recommended. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's really simple. And when we were collecting signatures to qualify for the ballot, we had to gather over 100,000 signatures. One of the biggest questions we got is, I don't understand. The city council already passed this plan. This isn't your plan. I'm like, yeah, it's the city's plan. Well, then why are you doing this? Why is it needed? And I'm like, that's a great question. And, you know, if cities just followed their own plans, cities would look very differently. But they're politicians, and politicians vote for things and give press conferences and hold shiny things in front of voters, and it sounds good. And then there's no follow through. In the city of Los Angeles, they haven't implemented their own plan. They've done 5% in 8 years, which is just pathetic. And so at that rate, the mobility plan that was passed by city council in 2015 would take 160 years to fully implement. HLA would dramatically speed up the pace of implementation by saying anytime the city repaves a street, which is already budgeted for, every year LA repaves hundreds of miles of streets, put in your own mobility plan at the same time when it's cheapest to do so. It's a very simple idea. It's not our plan, it's the city's plan. It's amazing to me, anyone that's spoken out against it from inside the city just hates the city's own plan, which is fine. But yeah, HLA is all about implementing the city's already approved road safety plan at a time when we have a 2-decade high of deaths in the streets of Los Angeles. And LA has become the most dangerous city in the country per capita to be a pedestrian in.
Wow, that's incredibly discouraging. And I think what you are describing is something that I experienced in my own city of Kansas City. And I think a lot of major cities are seeing is that we spend a lot of money on consultants and carrying out these big planning processes that have a lot of community engagement tied to them. And once these plans are adopted, it's really up to the political will of whether or not they get implemented, which is incredibly unfortunate. And ballot measures wouldn't be necessary if cities actually upheld the fidelity of the planning processes that they promote.
Yeah, and one of the criticisms we've gotten, not from a lot of people, but from some on city council, is this is ballot box budgeting. Citizens shouldn't tell the city council how to spend money through the ballot. We should be in charge of that. And our response is, if you had simply done your own job and actually implemented your plan, we wouldn't need this measure at all. But at this point, the situation is so dire in our streets. I mean, there's a certain amount of car blindness. If a serial killer was on the loose in Los Angeles, killing almost a person a day, that would make the nightly news every night. There'd be a, you know, citywide manhunt. But we just tolerate that level of death. A pedestrian is killed once every 2 days, injured once every 5 hours in Los Angeles. And that's just sort of tolerated as the status quo. That's just the way it has to be the nation's second biggest city. And for commerce and the economy to function, there needs to be cars. So, you know, throw up our hands and say that's the way it needs to be. And it doesn't.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about some of the shortcomings of the media in these cases. Do you think that that's something that could be changed and public perception could be changed about how we actually are seeing traffic deaths, as well as just how improvements are made on based on these plans that are adopted?
Absolutely. I mean, the LA Times article you cited is a great example. There's no comparison to what the status quo cost is to not implement the mobility plan. It just says the city administrative officer says that the plan is going to cost $3.1 billion over 10 years. By the way, the real number is a little less than $300 million with an M over 10 years. It's dramatically inflated. But there's another motion introduced by city council members 2 weeks ago that quantified the cost of so many people dying in our streets on the local economy in Los Angeles. And it's huge. It estimated that due to lost productivity, you know, shattered homes, missed mortgage payments, all the things that come with someone dying and dying, that the LA economy experiences about a $4 billion reduction in GDP every year due to people dying in our streets. Obviously, the biggest thing is loss of life. But if you're just looking at the numbers, it's also an incredibly expensive problem to live like this. There's some years in Los Angeles where the city has paid out more in wrongful death lawsuits filed by people hurt, by the family members of people hurt in our streets, than they have on Vision Zero and trying to make the streets safer. That's insanity. It's very expensive to have the status quo as is. Nobody's quantifying that. I don't think certain articles like the one you cited in the LA Times are reflecting that either. They're just saying, you know, do you want to spend $3 billion on bike lanes? And number one, it's many more things than just bike lanes. And number two, it wouldn't cost anywhere near that. But no one's putting it in perspective.
Well, let's put those numbers into perspective a little bit, because I thought, you know, it was really interesting how the city kind of put out this report in advance of the election, talking about and claiming that there's this $3.1 billion figure tied to the ballot initiative. And your campaign and organization and advocates are disputing that figure. Why is there such a difference between the figure that you're claiming this actually will end up costing and the $3.1 billion figure that's being put out by the city?
It's because the city administrative officer has politicized the figure. The CAO, which is an unelected position, appointed by the mayor and reports to the mayor and city council, the CAO has tried to defund Vision Zero every year since 2015, doesn't believe in investing in bike and bus lanes, thinks it's a waste of money. And so it's no surprise that he doesn't like Measure HLA. But I also think a role of government is to be transparent with voters. He's supposed to give an impartial analysis of what something's going to cost. Let me give you an example of the $3.1 billion, which, by the way, is up from $2.5 billion. That's the number that got mailed to voters. So somehow we cost $600 more million in just 7 weeks. Nothing's changed in the text of the measure.
Inflation has been horrible.
Yeah, inflation is out of control.
Right.
Of the $3.1 billion, two-thirds of it, $2 billion, is for Los Angeles fixing its sidewalks. There's 560 miles of sidewalks in what's called the Pedestrian Enhanced Network of the Mobility Plan. The way he calculated it is said, well, there's sidewalks on both sides of the street, so let's double that number to 1,120. And we don't know, he admitted this in his report, we don't know how many sidewalks need to be repaired, what percentage of sidewalks are broken in LA. So we're going to round up to 100%. And then we're going to take $1.25 million per mile times 100% of all sidewalks need to be fixed. And that's how you get to that number. There's only one catch. The mobility plan doesn't require the city to repair its sidewalks. It requires a lot of pedestrian improvements, but not repairing sidewalks. And so HLA, therefore, doesn't require the city to repair its sidewalks. So $2 billion out of $3 billion is simply not going to be mandated by HLA. The other $1.1 billion is for bike lanes. And he calculated bike lanes at almost $2 million per mile. I guess these are bike lanes that have drones that automatically massage you as you go through them and, you know, have a great tree tunnel and whatever else.
Do you get a free bike as you're entering onto it?
They pay off your mortgage when you go through it. and the true cost of bike lanes in Los Angeles, according to our Department of Transportation, is around $200,000 per mile, about a tenth of his cost. This isn't shocking. Like, what happened is in a back room somewhere in City Hall, he got together with other people that were opposed and said, how expensive can we make this to scare voters? And they came up with this number. The last thing I'll say is LA does have serious budget challenges this year. We have a budget shortfall, and the city is going to have to make adjustments and cuts for that. But LA also receives over $700 million per year in funding, in local return funding and special funding that can only be used for transportation and infrastructure. So what we estimate is about $28 million a year if HLA was implemented over 10 years, and none of that would need to come from the general fund. So the CAO's numbers are just highly misleading. And it's really unfortunate that we're not just having an honest conversation on if the city wants this stuff, but we're having scaremongering from certain people inside City Hall that don't want it.
So if this ballot measure is approved, how do you see it actually playing out? And how is it connected with the existing Vision Zero initiative and policies that the city has also adopted in addition to this plan?
Well, unfortunately, Vision Zero in Los Angeles has been a joke. Since 2015, a year when 88 pedestrians were killed and the city adopted Vision Zero, we're supposed to be 1 year away from achieving it. That's next year, 2025. And last year, 176 pedestrians were killed. So it has doubled in 8 years, despite Vision Zero. Our opponents say, see, Vision Zero doesn't work. Like, it's a waste of money. To which we respond, well, you actually have to implement it. You have to change things on the ground to achieve Vision Zero. You can't just announce a plan and cross your fingers and hope the city changes. So I think what will likely happen is if HLA passes, the city's departments will reorganize themselves around meeting the mandate that it requires. And the department that repaves streets and the department that stripes streets, those are two different departments in LA, will work much more closely together to make sure that they are meeting the ordinance's requirements. I think it's likely to, I know it will speed up mobility plan implementation. And by definition, the mobility plan, I mean, this all started with us saying there's too many deaths on the street. What do we do? Oh, the city actually has a pretty good plan. Oh, it's not implemented. Okay, let's just get them to implement their own plan. If the city implemented its mobility plan, we would be much closer to achieving Vision Zero. So I think it's kind of merging the two and hopefully accelerating it.
So Richard Serrano, who's a write-in candidate for city council in the San Fernando Valley, was quoted in this article saying that we don't have room for bicycle lanes that one person might ride once a day. We need the mobility and we need it for cars. What are your thoughts on that statement? And do you think that that is shared amongst the voters of Los Angeles?
Well, he's got what he wants. I mean, we have a city that's optimized for cars. So how's it working out? Are Angelenos happy with how often they're stuck in traffic and looking for parking? I don't think so. There is a truth that to implement the mobility plan, there's a lot of focus on the bike infrastructure. And when you look at it, it's a decent network. It's not perfect, but it's a decent network that would connect to each other or bike lanes. What nobody understands is the reason why the bike lanes today, the few that LA has, aren't used that often is they don't go anywhere. They don't really connect to anything else. They don't form a network. There are bike lanes in the city that were put in just because they fit without taking anything away from cars. And when the road narrows a block up and they no longer just fit, they just end. And if you're not a vehicular cyclist or a really brave cyclist, you're not going to want to use the bike lane at all because it just ends. How many cars would drive on a freeway that turned into a dirt road with potholes, you know, after a mile or part of the freeway didn't even exist? Like, how many cars would use that? Obviously, I disagree with that comment. I listened to that comment live at city council. That was done in a city council meeting. There's just a lot of misinformation around who uses bicycles. It's been called something, a tool for the rich. Rich white people mostly use bicycles when in fact in Los Angeles, it is disadvantaged communities that are mostly on bicycles. A lot of misinformation that nobody ever uses them. Well, there's two reasons for that. One I just explained. The other is that bikes are quiet. Bikes don't take up a lot of space. It's easy to miss a cyclist. They go by fast. You don't even notice. Whereas cars take up all the space and are dominant visually and you can really see them. Could there be bike traffic jams if a lot of people start biking in LA? That would be a great problem to have because they're just so much more efficient at moving a lot of cars. So obviously I disagree with the comment. LA has something that no other city in the world has. We have nearly year-round perfect weather. It is sunny almost all the time. And even when it rains, it's not that cold here most of the time. And so I just think it could be, you know, I think Copenhagen has about 65% of trips are done on bike. And I think the Netherlands is somewhere up there. Like, there's no reason why LA can't be at least in the teens, which would take so many cars off the road, given our weather and given the average trip. And maybe that's a vision that's hard to see for most Angelenos because they're just so used to a car-dominated system, but it's very possible here.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. And it's been my observation, and I don't have data, but it's been my observation that when bike infrastructure is built well, people come and people start riding and using it. That is something that I think is probably, you could apply that in a lot of different places. And electric bikes have also completely changed dynamics as far as thinking about bicycles as simply a recreational activity versus being a transportation option for people.
Well, actually, we just had our 50th Ciclovia, which is when they shut down a street completely to cars on a Sunday, and it's just for people on bikes and skateboards, and walking, and any way you want to get around outside of a car. It just happened this past Sunday, 2 days ago. And it was so amazing. First of all, the kids, which I always love seeing, these you know, everywhere from my 4-year-old on her own bike to older kids just riding by themselves, but also just the families and everybody. I mean, there were probably 10,000 bikes yesterday on one street in Los Angeles that could never move that many people in the same amount of space if they were all in cars. And every coffee shop and restaurant was bursting at the seams. And it was just so alive, people, you know, enjoying. And when I posted a video about that, people instantly attacked it saying, well, this is recreation. Okay, fine. It's fine for a Sunday, but not for transportation. And I just think people are very short-sighted. There's no reason, like I have a better quality of life because I ride my bicycle in Los Angeles. I don't stress about the time it takes for me to get somewhere. I don't stress about traffic, and I can park right in front everywhere I'm going. I don't think most people haven't tried e-bikes. Most people have, even fewer people have tried electric cargo bikes, which are true SUV replacements. I have 3 kids. I take them around in an electric cargo bike. And I think once people try it in a climate like Los Angeles, maybe I'm an idealist, but I really believe we can get up to 20, 30, even 40% of trips ultimately done outside of a car and with a much higher quality of life for the people making those trips.
Yeah, it is amazing how effective the automobile industry has been at branding car ownership as the ultimate pinnacle of freedom. It's certainly great for if you're taking long distances, but if you are driving around in a very crowded place in a major urban area, having a car is really a burden, and it can be quite freeing to actually not have to drive and park and have that burden attached to you as you're traveling around and taking trips.
It's also expensive.
It's also very expensive. So before we wrap up, I want to ask you what is next for the Streets for All organization. So you obviously are the campaign manager for this initiative, but you are also the founder of an organization that deals with a lot of different initiatives. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I'm moving to Canada if this thing goes down. So Streets for All's got a lot going on. So we have a political arm that endorses candidates. And we'll see how they do in March, and then we'll endorse in November. We have some really amazing projects. One of the most ambitious things that we've tried is a vision to reimagine the space taken up by LA's shortest and least trafficked freeway, the 90 freeway, which is a 3-mile-long freeway in the west side of Los Angeles that was supposed to be a 40-mile-long freeway, and the other 37 miles never got built in the 60s. It is essentially a glorified on and off ramp to the 405 freeway. And we put out this vision with 4,000 units of affordable housing, a huge park, bike trails, walking paths, and a bus rapid transit line through it. We have applied to the federal government for funding to do a feasibility study. And we'll know, in addition to the ballot measure, we'll know next month if we won that money. So if we did, that will be something we'll focus on. We also have a project that we completed a feasibility study for last year, extending a bike path along a creek. And I'm excited to say that the city of LA has now taken our study and is going to be applying for active transportation funding for construction for that bike path extension. So we'll be focused on that. There's a street in LA called Venice Boulevard, which is LA's the only street that goes from the ocean to downtown LA that's entirely in the city of Los Angeles. And we have a program called Venice Boulevard for All that tries to make Venice Boulevard a complete street with protected bike lanes, dedicated bus lanes, et cetera. And last year, after years of asking and fighting for it, about 4 miles of it went into the ground. So now we're trying to get that further extended east towards downtown and west towards the ocean. That's just a few examples, but we have a lot going on. We're also trying to end all freeway widening in the state of California and instead spend that money on transit and active transportation. And we're very active in Sacramento. Last year, the governor signed 7 new laws that we initiated, bills that we started and sponsored. And this year we're looking at about the same number. And you know, we're gonna have our hands full whether or not this passes. But I will say, and you know, when this airs, I'm either gonna look really smart or really dumb, but I do think that HLA is not just about Streets for All, about the mobility plan. It's kind of a referendum on progressive transportation ideas in the city of Los Angeles. Because remember, the mobility plan was just passed by city council. It was never passed by the voters. They just elected the people at city council. So if HLA passes, all the city departments, council members, et cetera, are going to feel like they have a mandate to then go do real change in the streets. If it doesn't pass, all of the opponents of things like bike lanes and bus lanes are going to come out saying, see, the voters don't want this. We'll just slow walk this even more. So I haven't heard a single opponent of HLA, including our firefighters union, by the way, which is saying if this passes, they won't be able to get to fires and heart attacks and stuff, which is just such nonsense. But I haven't seen a single opponent recognize the 337 people that were killed by traffic crashes last year and say, HLA isn't the answer, but here's my solution. They don't have another solution. They just don't want HLA. So I really think there's a lot on the line. And, you know, someone check on me, hopefully, please tweet at me the day this airs, because we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will definitely check on you. Michael, I commend you for your efforts. Keep fighting the good fight. And I wish you the very best with not just this vote next week, but all of the efforts that your organization is advancing. It's a big lift in Los Angeles and really, really all American cities. But I think Los Angeles is certainly a special case. So yeah, that's fantastic. Before we finish today, it is time for the Down Zone, which is the part of the show where we can share anything that we have been up to these days, reading, watching, things we've been listening to, et cetera. I think for my Down Zone, I actually want to share that in a couple of weeks, I'm going to Mexico City for the first time. So if you have recommendations, please send them to me. I have a small list of things that I'd like to see, but it's obviously a huge city, so I'm open to recommendations.
I will send you something. My dad grew up there, lots of family there, and it's an amazing city, especially from an urbanist point of view. I mean, they got the density, they have pedestrianized plazas, they have mass transit, they're building more and more bike lanes. It's a really special place. I just finished reading Curbing Traffic. And, you know, a lot of it I kind of already knew. I mean, I knew the Netherlands is paradise and et cetera. But I'm actually been toying with the idea of writing a book myself. And I have been reading a lot of other books to see what's already out there and where people are getting their ideas. And I thought it was a fantastic book, and it made me just want to, you know, if HLA doesn't pass, maybe I'll just move to Delft and I'll live a very happy, peaceful life. But I think going back to your point about LA, I do think it is one of the most hostile environments in the country for ideas like this. It is, Southern California is the place where car manufacturers test their new cars before the rest of the country because it's so car dominated. You know, we're about to have the country's largest rent-a-car center. I don't know if you knew that, but our airport is building that right now. So I think that if this can happen in LA, it can happen in any city in North America. It's interesting. I've seen opponents on social media say, they don't even live in the city of Los Angeles, so they can't vote on HLA. We have to defeat this so the idea doesn't spread. And so I'm going to say that we have to win the day so the idea spreads. There's already activists in Berkeley that are inspired by HLA and are gathering signatures to do something similar in Berkeley. This, especially in small towns, this isn't that hard. It's not that expensive. And you could really make a dent in your city by mandating that they make the streets safer. So I hope the idea spreads. I hope it's contagious. I think I digressed a bit from your question, but I'll leave
That's okay. I appreciate your response. And yeah, I'll be holding my breath until Tuesday and wishing you the best. We will have news once this article comes out as to whether or not it passed. And I think regardless of the outcome, there's a lot of positive things that can come out of this. So fingers crossed for you. Keep fighting the good fight regardless.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. And thanks to everyone for listening to Upzoned. Let me show you what I'm about to do. I'm about to get out.
get that.